service. It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
All right, good Saturday morning. Welcome, welcome, St. Louis, to the KMOX Home Improvement Show. I'm your host, Rich Orris, and I'm here to tackle all of your home maintenance and remodeling dilemmas today. Whether you're facing a leak from the rain that's actually occurring not just last night, but a little bit right now today, or maybe you're planning an entire kitchen renovation, or simply just looking to spruce up your living space a little bit, we've got the answers you need right here today. We're going to dive deep into your burning questions. So pick up that phone and dial 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 to join in our conversations today. Anything you need, from plumbing to painting, from leaks to lighting, we've got it. No topic off limits about your house today. Let's roll up our sleeves and make some of these home improvement dreams a reality for you. We've got the next 2 hours right here on KMOX. We've got baseball coming in later on this evening around 5 o'clock or so. So we've got an entire show for you today. And I really enjoy the opportunity to pretty much do what I do all week with Mosby Building Arts back here for everyone on the radio. Consider me your kind of go-to third opinion, just advice on anything going on. Again, you can find me here today, 314-436-7900, and don't hesitate to get in on the conversation. Got a great, great show planned today. Got a lot of things going on, a lot of things we can talk about. We've had some weather here with the rains, and then it stopped raining and was really actually pretty nice for 3-4 days straight there, and then rain coming in again some more. And a little bit, as I look out the station window today, it was coming down a little bit just a moment ago. So have a lot of things happening with the weather, the rain, the hail, the storms we've had in the past few weeks, few months in different areas. The latest one out in Baldwin and some of that area got a lot of damage. So a lot of questions, a lot of thoughts. Again, feel free to get with me today, 314-436-7900. And we've got Linda on the line. So let's go straight to Linda and see what's happening. Can you hear me, Linda?
Yes, I can.
Awesome. Thanks for calling in. What do you got going on?
I've got a swollen door in my house that I cannot get open. What do you suggest?
Is it a wood door? Is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's typically just swelling with the humidity, the rain, the moisture. Everything will kind of swell up in the spring, summer, the wetter time. We'll have a lot more humidity in the air in the summer. It tends to shrink down. So I see a lot of doors like yours that swell up and hit and don't operate well in the summer, but they do in the winter. So you have to be a little bit careful, because the kind of repair to make it work now would be to make the door smaller, so that when it swells, it doesn't swell big enough to impede the function of the door. The downside to that could be if you take off too much and in the winter it shrinks, you could end up not sealing to weather stripping very well and maybe getting some drafting around the door if it kind of gets too small. So you want to, If you try and repair it, you want to just do as little as possible to make it function, so to try and avoid that.
And I can't really do that because it's a door that is from my kitchen, and I keep it locked because it leads to the outside.
Okay. Yeah. So you either find somebody to kind of try and sand or plane that door off just a little bit to where it can open, close, and lock still. And, and then in turn, like I said, hope it doesn't shrink too much in the winter, or you have an entire new door system installed, frame, threshold, everything. You get into the newer ones, and they're usually not going to swell up and move that much. If you do like a fiberglass or a steel door, you might still get some movement, but not usually nearly enough to where you just can't even operate it.
Well, what can I do now to get it open?
Well, the way now to try and get it open is muscle from the outside to try and unlock it, turn the handle, and just push it in until you forcefully get that door to unlatch. It's smashed between the two pieces of wood, so it's a strong shoulder kind of bump to try and get that open. But the fear is if you're not opening it so that you can either completely take it out and replace it or do the fix to it, you might not get it shut again.
Yeah, it's got glass in it too.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe there was something I could, I don't know what I thought. You know, if it's swollen from the humidity and everything, I was trying to think what could I do to put between that and the wall to maybe, you know, force it some way. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's muscle. It's a pry bar that could damage the frame or the door. It's something like that to try and get it open under these circumstances. Or it's waiting until the humidity goes away and trying it until it does function. Or you're just kind of, I mean, the only other thing you could probably try is running a dehumidifier in the area of it to try and draw the humidity down in the kitchen. But a lot of this is coming from the outside, so that may or may not help. But you could try and just run a dehumidifier as high as you can go right next to it. I'd watch the humidity level in the rest of the house. You don't want to get it too low, but you could try that.
Yeah, I think that's what I'll try. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Linda. Great, great question. And something in good old St. Louis that we see way too much of. We have so many older homes around St. Louis and great stable buildings that last well over 100 years, and we've got a lot of these wood windows, wood doors that this tends to happen to, and it's just a fixture of what it is and how old it is and what's happening in our area. It's always, we get a lot of rain, we get a lot of humidity, we get a lot of things like that in St. Louis happening. So it's a occurrence that we see a whole lot, and that's one of the reasons why we replace a lot of doors around St. Louis to get to the newer doors where that is less of a likelihood of something like that happening. You install it correctly with a great company, the right size screws, all the things that hold it very well, and take all those steps to a high quality door install, and you shouldn't have any problems like that for a long, long time with a brand new door. So I think we're going to get into our first break here, but plenty of time, plenty of show, plenty of questions coming, hopefully, and plenty of answers for you coming up. 314-436-7900 is where you'll find me. Don't go anywhere. All right, guys, we are back, and a lot of time left here, a lot of show left for you. Got some really good things, some interesting things I can go over, but nothing as interesting as what you have going on around your house. The honeydew list, the rain, hopefully not coming in, but unfortunately we get a lot of that with these old houses in St. Louis. Also, they have some really good bones, but things just start to happen. If you've got anything going on you'd like to have a conversation, ask a question about, I'll be right here for you. You can find me, 314-436-7900. And we did have some interesting conversations last week that we went over with a lot of great questions and some calls about, we had Ann that called in and talked about a light fixture, kind of a 70s, 80s style drop ceiling with fluorescent fixtures in a bathroom. We've seen that a lot around St. Louis in that kind of mid-70s, mid-80s, in that time frame where they would soffit around the room, put a drop ceiling in the middle with a fluorescent fixture, and just talked about the ease of getting new fixtures instead of trying to correct that old fixture, replace the ballast in that old fixture. Sometimes it's just worth going to the LED newer fixture. Might be slightly more, but you're going to get something that's going to really last longer and not have issues with and not have to change bulbs in for a really, really long time. So, and we had a refrigerator light bulb that we talked about not working and how that could possibly be the switch if they've tried it a few times. And we had a conversation on removing popcorn ceilings, which was a very interesting one, talking about how to get rid of it, how to kind of mud out and skim coat and sand and try and make a smooth ceiling after that. Does take a certain level of ingenuity to get done. If you haven't done a lot of joint compound work, that could be the hardest part of that task. And kind of warned testing for asbestos, because there can be asbestos, and there was asbestos in a lot of popcorn ceilings in older homes. So test for that. I would test for that no matter what the age of your home is, just to be sure if you're going to be removing popcorn ceilings. You don't want to deal with any of that and have any issues because of that. So we covered a lot of ground and had a lot of fun, and we can plan to do the same this week with your stories, your questions. You can call me now. Phone lines are wide open, 314-436-7900. And speaking of that, we've got Francis on the line. Let's go and see if we can see what's happening there. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. Thank you for calling in. What's happening for you?
Well, I'm kind of sick. I'm 82 years old, and we used to do all our work. In fact, my husband and his best friend built our two houses, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, getting back to the problem, we have a toilet, and I can't remember when we replaced it. It's like, you know, a high-rise one, and it's at least maybe 2-3 years old.
Okay.
And when I flush it, sometimes it flushes and goes down the swirling, because it's one of those advertised on the box with the all the things and the toilet and the kid flush, and it'll flush anyways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't go down.
Okay.
And I'm frustrated.
Sure, sure.
So is the flush box maybe, should I look at that and see if maybe it's dirty in there or something? And also, are you supposed to clean the flush box every so often? And what else? There was something else. I'll think of it. I'll go ahead and answer.
Sure. So there's really not a lot of need for cleaning inside that tank, the box that holds all that water. The thing I would watch for, and what I've seen happen to people in the past, and it can be answered also by trying to figure out like when this is happening and when this isn't, because if it's happening when the first time you go to flush the toilet after you haven't flushed it for a while, like maybe half a day or 6 hours or so.
Overnight. Yeah.
Or overnight. But then after you do that and it didn't flush well and you think, wow, that was weird. It really didn't go down like it should. And you flush it again. Once it fills up, it flushes well. What could be happening, and what I've seen in the past, is the tank itself can start losing water, and the water, it's basically the flush seal that kind of lifts up and lets the water flush and goes back down. If that seal leaks slowly, and the water in the tank lowers over time, but maybe it didn't lower enough where it had to fill back up. It's just lower than it should be. When you go to flush, it will not flush correctly. And then if you let it fill all the way back up and you go, okay, now it's filled back up, you flush it and it flushes perfectly fine like it always did before, something like that inside that tank could be the problem. And you could just need to replace those inner guts or that flush valve that holds the water in the tank. And what I've done also is, like, if you look in the tank, if you're good enough where you take the lid off the tank and you look in the tank right after it fills up and you see where that water line is, you can also look in the tank like the next morning and see if it's lower.
Oh, okay.
And if it's lower, then you're slowly losing water. And the reason it's not flushing correctly is it doesn't have the right amount of water getting pushed down to make it flush how it should.
Oh, okay.
And these newer toilets don't utilize a lot of water. They're 1.3 to gallon flush. Well, if you get that to 1.1, that's a large percentage of the water. When we used to have a 3 gallon flush, if you lost that same amount of water, it really probably wouldn't affect it. But now that little bit of water is 20% of the water in the tank. So that can happen. So that may be what's happening. I've seen that in the past. I'd keep your eye on that and see if you notice anything with that.
Okay, well, I can check that. And also, remember the other question I want to ask you. I haven't noticed it lately, but I keep thinking it. Anyway, I forget, like, a few months ago, somebody came to our house, and they were very heavy, you know, and they used the bathroom. And then later on, like the next day or the next day, I noticed that there was something around the toilet, and I cleaned it up. But my husband, he didn't think nothing about it. And I said, but that was, you know, what's it still doing under there? You know, don't I have to get somebody to take the toilet up and see if the seal is broke? They've accidentally broke the seal or.
So, what? Yeah, if something moved around and they broke that wax seal and water got out from flushing the toilet from under the bowl where that wax seal is.
Right.
Really the only way to find out if that's an issue or not is to just replace the seal, because if you take it off, you're going to need a new one to put it back. But if that's something you could watch too, to just every time you use the toilet, make sure you don't see anything coming out around there.
I haven't seen anything lately, you know, when I clean it and that, but
yeah, sometimes these one-off occurrences do happen. And the other thing you can look for is if the basement underneath that toilet is unfinished and you can see the pipe that goes up to the toilet and you can see the plywood that's underneath the toilet, look from underneath and see if the plywood looks okay, see if there's stains, marks, anything going on. There could be old stains from a long time ago from a different toilet or something like that, but you can always keep your eye on it and make sure it doesn't change, or take a pencil and draw a line around a stain and see if the stain ever overtakes that pencil line, like it's getting bigger. So there's ways to keep your eyes on things like that before you just get into fixing something that you may not necessarily need to.
Yeah, right.
But pulling up the toilet and replacing that wax ring would be what needs to happen in that area. So, another question? Go ahead.
Yeah, but I don't know. I have a spot in my ceiling in the dining room, and I don't know where it came from, because the bathroom upstairs is I don't know. We had a new shower put in, so could that been leaking maybe? And swim it.
Sure. Yeah. So unfortunately, yeah, there could be, even though it's a new shower, depending on the quality of how they've performed that and done that, there's definitely newer showers that leak, unfortunately, even sometimes right away within the first year or so of putting them in.
I was afraid of that.
Yeah, so that is definitely a possibility. And there's a lot of different ways that showers can leak, a lot of areas, and it's not always the supply pipe or the drain pipe. Sometimes it's the tile, the caulk, the just getting behind the fixtures on the wall. There's a list of areas where you could get water from around a shower.
Right, right.
It's not as easy to find.
A leak in the roof, maybe, but it's not close. Well, it's maybe 6 inches from the, you know, where the walls meet.
Yeah. Yep. And sometimes those are from the roof, because if you're near a bathroom, you have a plumbing stack that goes up through the attic and exits the roof. And those plumbing stack roof boots tend to go bad. Squirrels eat the lead ones. The rubber ones go bad. I actually had this on my list to talk about how we cover those up today, because there's some better ways to do it. But we do find sometimes that that could be what's happening, because even those stacks might run between the toilet and the shower inside a wall. And so it looks like it's from the shower when really it could be that roof boot. So looking, stopping the search for a leak at a cloud is what I always try and advise everybody. If you haven't reached the clouds yet, then you may not have found all of the leaks. And I've seen it where it's both. You get a new shower, there's an issue with the tile, how they did like a recess niche into a wall. So we find a leak there, we fix the shower, and then 3 months later, they're like, well, I'm still getting water again. And then we figure out, oh, the roof boot was bad too. And it's actually two things. And we fixed one issue, and then the other one pops back up 3 months, 6 months, a year later. And you're going, oh, well, I stopped looking when I found the leak, and it really ended up being two leaks. So that's, that could always be a circumstance too. So try not to stop looking. So hopefully that will help you out, Francis. I hope that was good. I got to get into a break here, and if Al can hang on the line, we'll jump to them as soon as we return. All right, here we go. We are back again. Lot of show left. Got a whole hour after the next two segments, so if you're out there and you need something, I'm here for you. 314-436-7900. Jump in the conversations with all of us. We're having some good ones. And speaking of that, Al held the line through the break. So if we go to Al and see what's going on there, can you hear me? Are you with us?
Yes, I can.
Awesome.
Thank you for taking my call.
You are welcome, sir. Thank you for calling in, friend. What do you got going on?
Well, I'm trying to appease my wife with some new cabinetry, and I see a lot about refacing and stuff. Does it give you a truly good finish look after refacing compared to just changing out cabinets in general, the whole cabinetry in general?
I mean, that is an interesting question. I do like that question, because that is definitely seeing samples of what they do and the doors and what they change is a really, really good thing to do, because that's kind of subject to people's opinion. And I have products that we use for people that love them, and they're great long lasting products. And I have other clients that see the same product and go, oh, that just looks cheap to me.
Yeah.
And other people absolutely love it. And I'm like, I'm good with whatever. I think this is great. Like, I have this product at my house, and it works really good. So I've looked for cabinets with clients, and I've had some clients look at a line of cabinet and go, yeah, I'm just not feeling it. That seems kind of cheap or doesn't look as nice. And I have a lot of clients that use that line of cabinets and absolutely love them, and they last beyond our 10-year workmanship warranty, and they have great kitchens. And there's cabinets out there that are higher-end, true plywood boxes. The way they build them is better. The wood they use is better, and how they finish them. There's different levels of finish with roughing them up and doing different layers of finish to glaze them and make them look so different. So I personally have seen cabinets that have been just new doors put on and refaced, and we've done that even here at Mosby on some bars and basements and different areas like that. And it turns out looking great, and we absolutely love it. And then I've had other people look at the same thing and go, "Nah, that's not for me. I want to get to the real cabinet line. I want a high-end glaze finished," and they're paying a great investment to get some of the best cabinets on the line. But you know, so to me, I think it can look fine. I think it can be great idea, and I think it can last. It can last well. The biggest thing with refacing is it's kind of like an install thing. It's the quality of the cabinets that you have, and when they're gluing on pieces onto the face frame of the cabinets, I would search deeply and have good conversations into their warranties and how they honor them and how long they say it would last and what the warranty actually covers, because I've seen refacing not installed the best way possible, where it's peeling off and there's issues with it some years down the road, maybe 5 years or 10 years. And a lot of people, when you get new cabinets, you certainly expect them to last more than 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, that sounds more like a nightmare there, that's for sure.
It can be. It's kind of like the thermofoil cabinets that they've made, that where they wrap them with that shrink wrap kind of plasticky stuff. And there was some of those thermofoil wrapped cabinets that lasted a very, very long time, never had an issue with. But I've seen other ones where 10, 12 years down the road, all that plastic stuff is peeling off the doors, peeling up around the edges, and they're just having a huge problem with them. And when you have the problem, everybody's upset about that. Everyone expects their cabinets to last more than 5 or 10 years.
Right, right. And I also got a question about flooring. Taking up ceramic tile.
Uh-huh.
I hear nightmare stories on there's not really an easy way to do it other than chipping at it. You know, not knowing how the cement board's down, if it's screwed down or, you know, if it's nailed down.
Yeah.
Is there any easy way to attack ceramic tile, taking it up?
Not really. It's a muscle. Yeah, it's a muscle scrape, pry, especially if it's done correctly, because a lot of times when they put down the Durarock backing, they'll do a thin layer of the adhesive, the mortar, put it down, screw it down, and then you mortar put your tile. So sometimes that backing's even has some mortar to mortar that down thinly also. So even if you get to it, it's just a matter of getting underneath it and scraping and prying and pry bars and just breaking that stuff up and just seeing how long it comes up. Very hard thing to estimate the time that it takes to do something like that, depending on the condition of how it's put in.
And then if it is happen to be some mortar on the to the subfloor from the Durarock, does that start, you know, tearing up the subfloor where it could be an issue then for laying down hardwood after the fact?
Yes, it definitely can. You may end up with some plywood subfloor repairs to that floor, because if it starts tearing up the layers, because that subfloor is put on, it's built up in layers. So if you start ripping off a layer or two because of adhesive, you're damaging that subfloor enough that you're going to need to replace the areas that happens.
Okay, well, it sounds like I want ceramic tile to come back around. I want to come back into vogue instead of maybe attacking it like that. So maybe I'll give it a couple more years if I can hold her off and figure it out.
Yep. Yeah, it's a job.
Okie doke. Well, I appreciate your time and your answer, sir.
Hey, no problem. Not a problem at all. Not at all. So, hey, we're going to get into a break here. If, Ed, you want to hold the line through the break, we'll jump to you as soon as we return. Anybody else out there, 314-436-7900 finds me. We'll help you out today. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. The KMOX Home Improvement Show right here. Rich Orris sitting in with you. Hopefully helping you all out, answering your questions. Let's get straight to Ed with his question. Is thanks for holding through the break, Ed. What do you got going on?
Thanks, Rich. Well, I got two issues. One, I had two leaks in my ceilings. The first one had a roofer come out, went to the crawl space, got on the roof and said one of my stacks needs sealing. So we sealed it. Now, do I have to need to worry about condensation between the ceiling and the roof down that pipe, down that stack?
Is it a plumbing pipe stack that he was sealing up? Okay.
Yeah, I think it was air.
Yeah, typically you don't have to worry about condensation on the plumbing stacks. They just don't seem to produce, especially if they're older and they're cast iron. But even with the PVC, when you get metal transfers temperature a lot easier, a lot better. So when we vent ductwork, we put metal pieces up there or really, really thin plastic, that can produce greater condensation on your vents, blowing air out of the house, all of that. But I haven't seen a lot for condensation. But I would be curious where that pipe comes through the roof, the way you mentioned he sealed it up. Did he change the actual boot that covers the pipe, or did he just use like a tar-based? All right, here we go. We are back again. Lot of show left. Got a whole hour after the next two segments, so if you're out there and you need something, I'm here for you. 314-436-7900. Jump in the conversations with all of us. We're having some good ones. And speaking of that, Al held the line through the break. So if we go to Al and see what's going on there, can you hear me? Are you with us?
Yes, I can.
Awesome.
Thank you for taking my call.
You are welcome, sir. Thank you for calling in. Friend, what do you got going on?
Well, I'm trying to appease my wife with some new cabinetry, and I see a lot about refacing and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Does it give you a truly good finish look after refacing compared to just changing out cabinets in general, the whole cabinetry in general?
I mean, that is an interesting question. I do like that question because that is definitely seeing samples of what they do and the doors and what they change is a really, really good thing to do because that's kind of subject to people's opinion. And I have products that we use for people that love them and they're great long lasting products. And I have other clients that see the same product and go, oh, that just looks cheap to me.
Yeah.
And other people absolutely love it. And I'm like, I'm good with whatever. I think this is great. Like I have this product at my house and it works really good. So I've looked for cabinets with clients and I've had some clients look at a line of cabinet and go, yeah, I'm just not feeling it. That seems kind of cheap or doesn't look as nice. And I have a lot of clients that use that line of cabinets and absolutely love them, and they last beyond our 10-year workmanship warranty, and they have great kitchens. And there's cabinets out there that are higher-end, true plywood boxes. The way they build them is better. The wood they use is better, and how they finish them. There's different levels of finish with roughing them up and doing different layers of finish to glaze them and make them look so different. So I personally have seen cabinets that have been just new doors put on and refaced, and we've done that even here at Mosby on some some bars and basements and different areas like that. And it turns out looking great, and we absolutely love it. And then I've had other people look at the same thing and go, now that's not for me. I want to get to the real cabinet line. I want a high-end glaze finished, and they're paying a great investment to get some of the best cabinets on the line. But, you know, so to me, I think it can look fine. I think it can be great idea, and I think it can last well. The biggest thing with refacing is it's kind of like an install thing. It's the quality of the cabinets that you have, and when they're gluing on pieces onto the face frame of the cabinets, I would search deeply and have good conversations into their warranties and how they honor them and how long they say it would last and what the warranty actually covers, because I've seen refacing not installed the best way possible, where it's peeling off and there's issues with it some years down the road, maybe 5 years or 10 years. And a lot of people, when you get new cabinets, you certainly expect them to last more than 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, that sounds more like a nightmare there, that's for sure.
It can be. It's kind of like the thermofoil cabinets that they've made, that where they wrap them with that shrink wrap kind of plasticky stuff. And there was some of those thermofoil wrapped cabinets that lasted a very, very long time, never had an issue with. But I've seen other ones where 10, 12 years down the road, all that plastic stuff is peeling off the doors, peeling up around the edges, and they're just having a huge problem with them. And when you have the problem, everybody's upset about that. Everyone expects their cabinets to last more than 5 or 10 years.
Right, right. And I also got a question about flooring. Taking up ceramic tile.
Uh-huh.
I hear nightmare stories on there's not really an easy way to do it other than chipping at it, you know, not knowing how the cement board's down, if it's screwed down or, you know, if it's nailed down.
Yeah.
Is there any easy way to attack ceramic tile, taking it up?
Not really. It's a muscle. Yeah, it's a muscle scrape, pry, especially if it's done correctly, because a lot of times when they put down the Durarock backing, they'll do a thin layer of the adhesive, the mortar, put it down, screw it down, and then you mortar put your tile. So sometimes that backing's even has some mortar to mortar that down thinly also. So even if you get to it, it's just a matter of getting underneath it and scraping and prying and pry bars and just breaking that stuff up and just seeing how long it comes up. Very hard thing to estimate the time that it takes to do something like that, depending on the condition of how it's put in.
And then if it is happen to be some mortar on the to the subfloor from the Durarock, is that start, you know, tearing up the subfloor where it could be an issue then for
yes,
laying
it
down
can.
Hardwood after the fact?
Yes, it definitely can. You may end up with some plywood subfloor repairs to that floor, because if it starts tearing up the layers, because that subfloor is put on, it's built up in layers. So if you start ripping off a layer or two because of adhesive, you're damaging that subfloor enough that you're going to need to replace the areas that happens.
Okay. Well, it sounds like I want ceramic tile to come back around. I want to come back into vogue instead of maybe attacking it like that. So maybe I'll give it a couple more years if I can hold her off and figure it out.
Yep. Yeah. It's a job.
Okie doke. Well, I appreciate your time and your answer, sir.
Hey, no problem. Not a problem at all. Not at all. So, hey, we're going to get into a break here. If, Ed, you want to hold the line through the break, we'll jump to you as soon as we return. Anybody else out there, 314-436-7900 finds me. We'll help you out today. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. The KMOX Home Improvement Show right here. Rich Orris sitting in with you. hopefully helping you all out, answering your questions. Let's get straight to Ed with his question. Is thanks for holding through the break, Ed. What do you got going on?
Thanks, Rich. Well, I got two issues. One, I had two leaks in my ceilings. The first one had a roofer come out, went to the crawl space, got on the roof and said one of my stacks needs sealing. So we sealed it. Now, do I have to need to worry about condensation between the ceiling and the roof down that pipe, down that stack?
Is it a plumbing pipe stack that he was sealing up? Okay.
Yeah,
typically you don't have to worry about condensation on the plumbing stacks. They just don't seem to produce, especially if they're older and they're cast iron. But even with the PVC, when you get metal transfers temperature a lot easier, a lot better. So when we vent ductwork, we put metal pieces up there or really, really thin plastic, that can produce greater condensation on your vents, blowing air out of the house, all of that. But I haven't seen a lot for condensation. But I would be curious where that pipe comes through the roof. The way you mentioned he sealed it up, did he change the actual boot that covers the pipe, or did he just use like a tar-based roof caulking to kind of seal a rubber, like neoprene gasket that's up there? Or do you know?
Well, he was on the roof, and I think he said he used a sealant.
Okay.
He didn't replace anything. He just used a sealant.
Okay. Is it a?
I guess it was pulling away from the roof.
Yeah. Is it a flat roof or a sloped roof with shingles?
Angle.
Okay.
Angle shingles.
Yeah. So a lot. I mean, the generally with those plumbing pipes that come through your roof, it's a good idea to change that entire roof boot plastic pipe cover. If he just put some sealant around it, it's going to have a limited lifespan of however long that sealant will last with the rubber and the pipe and the heat and the rain and the things going on the roof. So if he just sealed it up, I would say you're probably going to want to change that roof, that entire roof boot at some point within the next year to 5 years max. That would probably need to be changed. I don't see the sealant lasting real long on a lot of those conditions.
Okay. So would a plumber or a roofer fix that?
Well, a roofer, yeah, it would definitely be a roofer, and it just depends on how they tackle how these things work. When you have a plumbing pipe come through a roof, there's a few ways to handle that. And if it's a plastic PVC pipe on a newer home with PVC plumbing coming up through the roof, it's very typical they use a roof boot that flashes into the roof, and it's like a rubber hole that kind of wraps around the pipe, and that rubber is tight to the pipe. And of course they make the rubber for different size pipes that come out, whether it's 2 inch or 3 inch or 4 inch. And that rubber tends to kind of get hard and crack with the heat, and roofs are very hot. Attics are very hot. So the rubber just really doesn't last really all that long. I see those rubber boots lasting 5, maybe 10 years a lot of times at the best. So a lot of people, once they see that rubber doing that, and I did this exact same thing at my own house because I had it. So I went up on the roof and I had some water spots getting in, and I went up on the roof and I saw that one of those rubber boots was bad and it was cracking. So I went to my garage, I got some of that black roof sealant tar caulking, and I caulked it, and then I wrote it on a list: replace that roof boot, because I know that caulk is only going to last a certain amount of time. Maybe it lasts a couple years, I don't know. But I just immediately put on my list, within the next 12 months, I'm going to fix this. so that I don't have to look back at it again for another 5 to 10 years. So there's different ways to do that. And there's better roof boot covers now, too, that are way better than just the rubber ones. And even the lead boot covers that we use can last a really, really long time, right up until a squirrel eats the lead. So, and everywhere, the squirrels are everywhere, and they like to eat the lead. So you'll get a roof boot made out of lead that could last 20, 30, 40. I've seen them last 50 years if a squirrel never eats it. But the minute the squirrel eats it and puts a hole in it, you get a leak. So they make these metal ones now. GAF makes this, it's called a pivot roof boot that's metal, and you can get it in about 4 or 5 different colors. They can kind of go with the color of the shingles. There's like a black and a brown, and there's one called weathered wood because that's a shingle that is wildly used here in St. Louis with all different manufacturers. And these are metal boot covers that squirrels will not eat. It will cover the whole pipe. It'll cap over the top of the pipe and get the water going inside the pipe. And so these will last a very, very long time. And that's kind of my new go-to best way to do it, because that will last as long as your roof does. If your roof lasts 20, 30 years, that boot's going to last 20, 30 years. So that's a good way to do it. And squirrels won't eat that galvanized metal. So that's the best way to fix that roof boot.
Okay. Another question. So the leaks, the stains on my ceiling, he suggested I use a kill spray. Why would I use a spray when I could just use a liquid, you know, from a can?
Well, a spray can, it's just you don't dirty up your brush. And if you buy the kills that's the oil-based, you're a lot better off. So if you spray it from a can, you just don't have the brush and all the nasty stuff to clean up from the oil-based product to cover up the stain. So it's just an easier cleanup. You don't got to worry about that. So I would say, yeah, spray can kills. Make sure you get the good original formula oil-based. It's going to stink, air your house out, have a window open, run a fan, that sort of thing, ventilate well. But, hey, great questions, Ed. I got to get to a break here. I'll tell Steve we got our news break, but if you could hold on through the break, we'll jump to Steve as soon as we get back. We'll also have plenty of time, a whole nother hour for everybody. 314-436-7900 is how you will find me. And we're having fun. We're having a good time. We're going to remain here. We'll get to Steve when we return.